All right, we are live officially. There we go. Welcome everybody to episode 50 of the Midwestern Social Scientists, coming to you live from Facebook and from YouTube at my Gamer Psychology page. I am Dr. Kip Pietrantonio, and with me,
it's Keith McIntosh, folks.
And so what you're probably not used to is, one, us doing a live episode, and two, us being together.
Physically together,
but we knew we had to do it one more time together before 2017 was over, so we literally did it on New Year's Eve.
Made it happen. That's what counts.
And so what we're going to be doing today is talking about what it means to do 50 episodes. We're going to do a retrospective episode where we kind of look back. We're also going to be responding to your questions. So please ask questions on the Facebook page or on the YouTube page. We have our producer, Zach Quila, who is going to be helping us as well in the background with questions. So he's going to be throwing us questions if we can't get them all or we miss some. So, but Keith, how's it feel to be back in the Midwest?
It feels great. It was cold. It was very cold.
It is brutally cold outside. It has been for the last few days. I was recently in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Were you now?
And it was a solid negative 15 degrees.
I can't even imagine. I mean, we're both from Michigan, but growing up down south, as it were, I haven't really experienced that harsh cold. It was, at least not for very long.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. Since I lived in North Dakota, I hadn't experienced cold like that. It was pretty intense. So,
have you done the thing I see guys in Canada do where they go outside with hot water, throw it up in the air? Have you done that? Can you pull it off?
I've done that. I did that in North Dakota, and it's pretty incredible. It just turns into ice instantly, and it kind of mists off into the air. It's a very strange thing. There's a lot of – when you hit that negative 30 wind chill, the weather gets really strange really quick. Like when you breathe out the – moisture in your breath, in the carbon dioxide you're breathing out, it's just a fall to the ground.
Really?
Yeah, and so it becomes like twirls out of your mouth when you get down to that. It's very strange. It's not just like, whew, it's...
I feel like I've got, like, I can kind of brag about being from the north because I'm used to these cold, harsh winters.
Yeah.
Then I remember Canadians are above us and, like, must laugh at us.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it's like to be Canada and go through the winter.
Yeah, especially in, like, Calgary.
Yeah.
Where you're just, like, literally moving cattle around.
It's just insane.
Like, and doing, like, oil mining.
I mean, I really can't believe people even live up there. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's really strange, to be honest. So... anyway, so Keith, we have done 50 episodes.
50 episodes.
Of the Midwestern Social Sciences
50
podcast.
50 episodes.
Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it. I mean, this started kind of not on a whim. It was something that we really wanted to do. But, you know, you don't know what the future is going to bring. And I think when we started, it was just something fun to do for, you know, us to, like, hang out. We'd sit and go to, you know, get dinner, sit and chat. We're both into psychology and sociology. I think we're, like, fairly thoughtful people.
All right.
But also like to just play around and have fun. And at some point, I think it occurred to us that it's, like, decent content. You know, it's not amazing. We're not geniuses. But I felt like we had some, you know, some interesting things to say. Mm-hmm. And so we set up a microphone and see what would happen.
Yeah.
And here we are not that long later with 50 episodes.
50 episodes. I mean, I think about 50 hours of talking with you. That's a long time.
It is a long time. It's a long time.
But it doesn't seem like it. I mean, it doesn't. Every episode has been, like,
time flies.
Interesting or fun for me. And yeah, so the one thing I would say that we've definitely learned from this process that was how much work goes into a podcast.
It's more work than you think.
Like, I think a lot of people just think, you know, you start a recording, you talk for a while, and then you just put it on the internet.
And that's that.
And that's that. But it's actually a lot more to it than that. And I think... we've had to kind of go through our trials and tribulations
for
and
sure.
Learning the process. Just getting the podcast online a lot of times has been a little bit thrilling
don't
in terms
think
of like things you have to go through to make that happen.
No, it's fun to figure stuff out too, though, because you go in total as a novice, totally blind. You have no idea what you're doing. But you feel like geeked up about it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to figure stuff out through trial and error.
Definitely.
I do think it's like you can make it really simple if you want.
Yeah.
Like you can just put a microphone up, record it, put it online, and that's that. But you can also put in so many hours of editing, putting in music, really
Definitely.
Polishing it up. So there's like no, the threshold is really low.
Mm-hmm.
You can just put stuff online, people do. But you can basically put in an enormous amount of time to make it really professional seeming.
Right.
And I feel like we just kind of like slowly but surely worked on making it nicer.
Yeah.
And here we are today. This is like a show.
Yeah, it's actually
didn't start
a
off
show.
As a show. Do you remember the first episode? I don't even know if we have it online now, do we?
I think it's gone
It's
now.
Too crappy.
Yeah.
It was just the laptop microphone. And we didn't even have a real microphone. It was just us sitting on the couch, talking through and trying our best to pace ourselves. Because that's part of it too. It's not just in real life, you don't realize conversation dies off for a minute. Nobody cares. You know, you're sitting there, whatever, drinking, doesn't matter. Picks back up again, dies off again. It switches to one topic, switches to another topic. And all that's just normal. And when you do a podcast, it has to be natural. It has to flow. Yeah. But you also have to sort of be in control the whole time.
Right.
It's like hot potato or something. You can't let it die. And that actually is really challenging.
That's challenging. And I also don't think people recognize how often that you depend on inside jokes and memories between people when you're discussing something. And you have to recognize that there's a third person in the conversation at all times.
Yeah.
So you're always talking to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I can't be like, hey, Keith, remember that time we went to, the Hocking Hills together? And people are like, what's the Hocking Hills? I have no idea where that is. I've never been to Ohio.
Yeah.
So you have to build that in without making it artificial or going like, oh, hey, well, this is what we're talking about, by the way, guys.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's definitely true. There's a ton of context in conversations where, especially if it's a good friend, and they've seen you grow up and stuff and they really know you, you have a conversation with them and you just understand that there's like a mountain of information they know about you.
Right.
You take it for granted. So you make little comments or like you're saying, you share a story and you know that they know exactly what you're talking about. And it's weird to like readjust and to kind of like, you have to filter everything you're saying through this filter of, okay, this is a stranger, this is someone I don't know. I have to take it back and make sure I'm communicating everything really effectively. And that's really tough. It's really easy to forget about that.
And I just know as like a novice therapist too, like you spend a lot of time listening to yourself talk. I think we talked about that in the psychotherapy episode. And that's very painful when you're editing a podcast. And I became very aware of how often I say like.
Everybody hates the sound of their voice.
Yeah, it's like Chinese water torture.
I say like a lot. I'm trying to kill that. It's hard to, though. It's just a pause. It's a natural pause. I've known you since I was 18, I think, right? Freshman year of college. And you have a different way of speaking now, irrespective of the podcast. That probably has an impact too. But I think just from your experience in your profession, you have a slower pace, sort of more, I don't know, attuned to emotion, way of talking. I'm sure it comes from counseling. I mean, it's got to come from counseling.
I think it's also like I'm just tired of life. You know, I don't have the energy anymore. It's funny you should say that because it looks like Mary Baker says to us, Kip, you always seem so happy, always smiling. Why?
You're just tired of life. It's just
having
a
good life going.
It's just a fake.
You know?
No, it's all fake.
That is true. It's a shell. There's actually a very deep well of depression. It's right about here in this region. Goes down.
What I was going to ask you, do you think that there's any connection between that counselor voice and the podcast voice? Do you hear that at all?
You know, to be honest, Keith, I think part of it is I've actually been inspired by you a little bit.
Because
I think you have such a good podcasting voice. And I think, like, I'm funny and I'm silly and stuff, and I bring something unique to it. But there's times where I'll listen to the way you've spoken on the podcast and be like, oh, I want to be more like that. Yeah. I want to sound more like that. Yeah, definitely.
See, I feel like I'm, like, steady, but I'm worried I'm boring. So I try to, like, force myself to – like, I'm just a chilled-out person in real life. I'm go with the flow. Like, once in a while I'm in, a crazy mood and I want to be wild. But most of the time I'm, like, easygoing. But I think it's fun to listen to somebody who's like more spontaneous. So I try to will myself to be a bit more spontaneous when we talk.
Right.
It's like an interesting, it's a weird kind of mirror podcast is for yourself, for your voice, your personality, how you present yourself. And you do end up like editing yourself, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know, makes you maybe more neurotic because you're more hyper aware.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of kind of shaping yourself into a more presentable person, it's a positive thing. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think it's funny that you say that, like, you're more of a chilled out person, because I think I'm more of a, like, naturally anxious person, generally. I think I play a weird game with myself where I'm, like, very anxious but very extroverted.
Yeah.
Which is, like, playing with fire.
Right? Is the extroversion is kind of, like, to quell the anxiousness? Like, it puts
gives you
more control.
Probably to some extent. Like, if you're talking, you have some control over the conversation or the direction of where things are going.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's just from being Italian.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Italian, you're like, you talk all the time and you're anxious. That's kind of the way
it's the way it goes. I didn't know the anxious thing. Is the anxious thing part of it? Being anxious?
Tell us about Barcelona.
Tell us about Barcelona.
Okay, so I recently went to Barcelona with my fiance, and we had a wonderful time. It's a beautiful city. It sits by the beach. We rode bikes all over the city. One thing that's kind of interesting about Barcelona is people there are very, very proud of the Catalonian identity. Mm. And so they, you know, there's like people who are like proud of Texas in America,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But in Barcelona, it's like every apartment has a Catalonian flag from it. And
really?
They have these signs that said, just see, as in like, yes,
yeah,
everywhere for like, vote yes for Catalonia.
What region is Catalonia?
It's like a state within Spain.
Yeah.
And so it's the southwestern part of the country.
Like Portugal?
Yeah, Portugal would be southeastern part of the country that goes down into like I can't remember which sea, the Mediterranean sea,
yeah.
There. And so there was a huge identity, and to the point where, you know, people speak like Catalan.
Yeah.
More than they would try to speak Spanish. And that was like really, really interesting. Like they wouldn't have Uber or anything. Like they don't allow like a lot of outside American influence because they really want to preserve the identity internally. So yeah, Barcelona was really nice. A lot of scammers. A lot of people wanted us to smoke weed at their cafes.
Oh really?
Yeah, there would be like a lot of people being like, "Oh hey, come on, you want to come to the cafe and smoke? You want to come?" And we would just be like, "No."
Did you hate that?
Well, it got a little obnoxious. As, you know, you're just trying to walk down the street and like look at beautiful sights.
Yeah.
You know, look at all the beautiful churches and museums, and you've got these people kind of like, come on, you know, it's like so sketchy.
Yeah.
And, you know, people just were looking out to scam me and everything. But beautiful country, I mean, beautiful city, the language is really wonderful. An international city. I mean, everywhere you go, there was people from everywhere. It was very clear to me that people in England go to Barcelona to like vacation. That's like their Florida.
I think because the weather sucks so much in the UK, people really like to go to Spain. I was at a party island right off the coast of Spain. I forget what it's called now. It's famous though, but it's famous for drunk British kids like getting into trouble.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's always wild where when you are talking about another country that you know a little about, it's like homogenous. It's just one country. And then generally speaking, when you go to a foreign place, you find out, oh no, it's fractured into all these different regions, whether it's political regions or just cultural regions, and that there's like the general identity, the overarching identity isn't actually that strong.
Right.
People are really proud about being from Texas or whatever it is, whatever the fracture occurs at. And it's always like, you know, changes the way you see the world because you appreciate, oh no, I thought like this entity made sense, but in reality, it's like way more complicated.
Yeah. I just think it's kind of dumb to be proud of where you're from.
It's really stupid. It's nothing you control. You know,
nothing you control. You're just born there.
Yeah,
so.
Why would you care?
All right, so we got another question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you guys know if you have an audience outside of the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know if you have any listeners in Spain or Barcelona?
Yeah, we do. We actually do. So the cool thing about Podomatic, which is the hosting service that we put our podcast on, is you get analytics from all over the world. And it's actually fascinating how many people, you know, we have the United States and Canada who listen to our podcast, but then we also have like places all over Europe. I mean, literally every country
in
Europe.
When we first started, Kansas City was a big city for some reason.
Yeah.
And there was a foreign country. You remember what it was?
Hong Kong is huge too as well. We would get a lot of, we'd get a lot from Hong Kong, a lot from like Paris and London. And part of that is just like population. I don't think like the British love us or something like
that. Know.
I think it's just you have a lot of people in a metropolitan area. You're more likely to, you know, have hits from there.
Yeah.
But that's been fascinating. I think at one point we had hit like 150 countries had downloaded our podcast.
It's amazing.
Which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
That was about the time we hit that first like 10,000th download, which was pretty exciting stuff. So, all right. So we got another question here, huh? Did you see the Gaudi house? We did. We saw the Gaudi house. We saw, and this is talking about in Barcelona.
Is that the house that's been, they've been working on it forever?
That's
something
the
else?
Church.
Okay.
The house and the church are two different things.
So what's
things.
The house?
The house is in his park. Basically, here, like, he has all these buildings, this Gaudi guy, or Gaudi, I think is how you say it properly. And all of his buildings look like candle wax melting.
Whoa.
And so it has this very unique, like nothing else looks like it. He's got various houses around Barcelona. And so it looks really strange and unique. And his art style is uniquely him. Like you can identify a building that he made away from anybody else easily, like a second. Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty neat.
I wonder if his stuff is in other countries or is it all in Spain?
Oh, good question. I think a lot of it's in Barcelona. I mean, there was like four or five things that he had made. I mean, he has an entire park he basically designed. And then the church he designed, he died before it was finished.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so they're still working on it. They've been working on it for like 100 years.
That's one of those big divisions between Europe and the States. The idea that you would work on anything for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
That you would have like a church that would slowly but surely be built over centuries.
Yeah, that's right.
There's nothing like that here.
Yeah.
You know, and it really shows devotion, like how important religion was, at least back in the day, in terms of devotion to building a cathedral.
Yeah.
There's like nothing. There's just nothing like that in America.
Or even like the pyramids took like hundreds and hundreds of years, right, to build like all of them over time and things and everything.
We're so sophisticated these days,
right.
But we like don't have that kind of devotion to something. I don't think to slowly build when you know you're going to die, your kids are going to die, your grandkids are going to die, and this thing still isn't going to be finished.
Yeah,
there's nothing like that.
It's like that polar opposite of instant gratification. So we got another question. What was one humbling moment you had in Barcelona? Everybody wants to know about Barcelona. So
why humbling though?
Why humbling? A humbling moment. I think the entire trip to Europe was just very humbling because I became hyper aware of how American centric I am.
Yeah.
You know, and you, at least I did, you know, you just think you start realizing everything about your life has occurred in one very specific culture that has very specific social rules. And I definitely was, I mean, you know that, but to like experience it, it's kind of like the, you know, in Good Will Hunting, when Robin Williams is like, I'm sure you can tell me everything about Michelangelo, but until you go into that Sistine Chapel and see that ceiling and like look up at it, it's like not the same. I think it's the same thing until like I experienced the pacing, the lifestyle of Europe for like the couple weeks I was there. I didn't really understand that, you know, America is just one little tiny country. I mean, it's not a tiny country, but one country in this massive world that we live in.
You were telling me when you got back, everybody was freaking out about the Buckeyes. Is that right? Were you saying that to me? You had this kind of, you know, not life-changing experience, but a pretty intense experience in Europe. You came back home, and it's like everybody's thinking about football.
Yeah.
And it's just this feeling of like, wow, this really is a small little bubble.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
A trip. Really
that's a very real thing when you leave and you come back. Like, I used to listen to students who would come back from, like, you know, other countries, and they'd have, like, reverse culture shock and kind of, like, you know, reverse culture shock. But there's a real reality to that because you can't, your worldview changes, but the rest of the world stays the same, you know, and people are stressed out about the same things that seem so insignificant, you know, and so,
it's always amazing to me when you think about, like, John Kerry or Hillary Clinton traveled all over the world as Secretary of State and, like, went to every country, you know, and have seen, like, so much, and I just wonder, like, for people who are either really rich billionaires who are flying in private jets everywhere, politicians who are really powerful, who just see whose worldview is not, it's not really located in America. It's like really seeing the whole planet at the same time, all the time.
Right.
I wonder how that impacts how they see things and how different they feel from the average American.
Right. And how strange that's got to be then to come back and listen to somebody talk about, you know, like they have to go to this like little cafe in the small town and eat like the green beans in order to be like accepted.
You
know, and you've just been like talking to the, you know, diplomat in China or a diplomat in India or something like
that. Yeah, you have to, you're like a professional chameleon. You have to be able to change to whatever context, whatever circumstance, impress rich people, impress poor people, like convince everybody that you're a good person. That's got to be incredibly tough.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, I mean, I'm sure some people just shine because they love that kind of thing, but I could see how, it's no wonder people think politicians are phony, because you're always changing.
You have to,
you have to
survive. It's the only way you could do it. The other weird thing about that I would say is kind of a strange thing, is to if you're a politician like that, and you're married, so like the Clintons, for example, it's got to be really weird to be like, oh, we're in a marriage, but we both travel all over the world. Because I know, like, just me and my partner, just literally having time together at the end of the day, we're so busy.
Yeah.
It's like we got to carve out that hour or two with each other.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're, like, the Clintons. You must, like, never see each other. Or, you know, any, like, I think Mitch McConnell's wife is, like, a secretary or something like that.
Obama just, I read something he said recently about what's changed now that he's not president. And he said, well, if I want to, like, stay in bed for an extra 40 minutes, or if I want to talk to Michelle in the morning for an extra 40 minutes, I can do that.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that makes sense though. You know, like you have no time to yourself when you're in that position. Mm-hmm. And it must be a big luxury to just have an hour or so to, right. to chill out and, you know, talk.
I actually wonder, do you think that Obama can like let that go? Especially with Trump in office. It's gotta be, like,
I think he's a machine. I think it's like almost impossible to get to that level. Well, I shouldn't say impossible because Trump is not that type of person, but it's really tough to get to that level
right.
without having like Herculean discipline and just not listening. Like you know, you want to lay in bed in the morning. You don't. You get out of right. bed and do exactly what you need to do. You make friends with exactly who you need to make friends with. You have to be incredibly disciplined. I think yeah. I read something where Obama would eat like 5 M&Ms or something like that. He disciplined himself. He'd have a little sugar, but not too much. Wow. You have to be a machine to rise to that level. So I think it's got to be impossible to turn that off.
And that's only the stuff that we see. I remember that there's this room that all the House of Representatives people go to. It's literally a room full of cubicles. Mm-hmm. And all they do when they go into that room is call rich people.
Phone calls, yeah.
And ask for money. And they just have to listen and talk. And they said it's like torture yeah. to do it because yeah. you're just... that sounds like my personal hell, like calling up these rich people and being like, hi, I'm a representative of the people. You know, your steel industry is really great. Is there anything yeah. I can do to help you? Okay, give me some money. You know, it's like poison.
It's
so.
Just a torture.
But got some people on here. Feel free to ask questions. This is the Midwestern Social Scientist, episode 50. We're definitely taking questions and kind of just responding. So we got another question.
Did you guys have any other names? For the podcast that you thought of, or did you settle almost right away on Midwestern Social Scientist?
We didn't settle right away, but I don't remember the contenders. I mean, I think it was we could have done anything, but right. we're not going to talk about sports. We're not going to talk about this. We're not going to talk about that. We figured, well, we're both social scientists. Uh-huh. So we ought to pick something in that vein, if not literally social scientists. And
right.
then we talk so much about the Midwest and kind of how marginalized this region is, and it became, especially with the Trump election, like it became an important region. You know, it's like this area that's not in Hollywood, it's not given attention, and yet it actually has a pretty big impact on the trajectory of the country. So I right. think it just made a certain amount of sense, like
right.
we'll brand ourselves this way.
And as far as like other names, I know we toyed with like the Midwesterners, but that we were like, well, that's just kind of vague
yeah.
and it doesn't really tie it into anything.
Yeah.
Part of it for me was, I remember I was reading this psychology textbook a long time ago, and they were talking about when psychology came over from Europe. There was like all this analytical psychology and Freudian mm-hmm. stuff, and it was all like symbolic. But then like American pragmatism got yeah. hold of psychology.
Yeah.
And there was this thing that came out that was like, if there's one thing that's like this kind of joking rule that came out in academics that was, if there's one thing, measure it. If there's two things, correlate them.
Mm-hmm.
And that became like the rule for mm-hmm. Midwestern social scientists. And then that became like the world psychology, and that evolved into cognitive behavioral therapy. Anyway, what they called it was Dust Bowl empiricism.
Wow.
And so, and that was like a big inspiration for me for the podcast is I wanted to call it, I think originally, the Dust Bowl empiricists. But that was like so abstract
sure, yeah.
and weird that nobody would have understood it. So I was like, oh, I'd like to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of got descriptive. And then, you know, I think what really kicked it off is we made a logo, and the first logo was garbage. Like I've seen it now. It's like this really ugly, colorful map with like this almost like it looks like word art.
Yeah.
Like kind of across the front of it. And that was so funny to look back at, and I still have it. It just looks terrible.
Yeah.
And then we made this logo, and this logo I think we both really liked and were attracted to.
You know what, though? To me, Oklahoma being included was more about aesthetics. I want that
yep.
dimension. I don't know if it really belongs there.
Yeah, I don't really.
No.
Well, it's there. I mean, we kind of claimed it. So, I mean, technically, I would make the argument that the Midwest is possibly just like here.
Yeah.
You know, even Missouri, I don't know, would cut. But I think if we asked people in Missouri and Kansas if they were Midwestern, I think they would definitely say yes.
I really just think of like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio. To me, this is like the heart of the
Midwest. Right. But part of that is like, I think this is like the Rust Belt Midwest.
True.
And this is the farming Midwest.
Oh, that's true.
Because a big part of the Midwest, I think, is like Superman. You know, he like grew up in Kansas.
Oh, I never think about that. Yeah.
And, you know, think of like the wheat fields and everything like that. So, okay.
All right, Alice has a question here. for those who haven't had an opportunity to tune in and listen to the podcast, what are some memorable kind of moments and memories that you've had in making of the podcast?
Mm, that's a great question.
We made a Trump podcast before he was elected, which I should listen to now.
Yeah.
That was fun. And just taking – it was one of those moments where I could edit in a way where I pluck out clips from his speeches.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because it was like I could put our conversation juxtaposed to the actual person speaking. I really enjoyed that. And it was also just like – it's a time capsule, you know, because it's like our view on something that was really influential in the country before
right.
it took place.
Well, and it was in June, so it was.
Was it June?
Yeah, it was like June, and he got elected in. I think it was June, and then he got elected in November. And I specifically remember us at the end of the podcast going, "Oh, and there's no way he'll get elected. Like, isn't this hilarious that he's even a candidate?"
Yeah.
And just like the mockery, we were so mocking.
Yeah.
Of it, and then to go back later and be like, wow, he actually got elected. We even then, we believed there was no chance. I still believe there was no chance until the next day when, like, even when he got elected, I was like, something's up.
Yeah.
And then it happened. That was a big one. I think the first time that we had a guest, which was Kelsey, I believe, or was it Maria?
I think Kelsey may have been.
Kelsey, I think, was our first guest, and that was really unique because we had to recognize we had to change the format of it, and we learned a lot about guests. So let us tell you something about guests on a podcast. You have to do so much anxiety management as a podcast host in order for people to feel comfortable to put it on the internet.
It's true.
Because everybody, when they record the podcast, they have fun doing it, and then immediately there's like a tidal wave of anxiety that goes over the top of everybody where they start reflecting on everything they said.
Yeah.
And they get super anxious, and they're like, oh, that didn't sound right, or that wasn't correct.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, it was fine. It was fine. And that anxiety lasts until they start getting positive feedback.
Yeah.
Like when we actually put it on the internet, everybody's like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is so amazing.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Then they're happy, but you have to help the guest weather the storm.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people that are like, can you please edit that out? Can you please go back and change this one word or make sure this fact is correct? And we're like, it's not going to matter.
It's not going to matter. It's tough though. Cause we're in control of it. So for us, like it's fun. It's, we can edit out stupid stuff that we say if we want to,
right.
which we did back in the day. I don't think we do that so much anymore. But I can appreciate if you're a guest, well, you're not in control. And also there's a sense of like, oh, they've invited me for my expertise or my charisma or my whatever. And so I need to perform. And that's not really why we invite people. I mean,
yeah,
we just
not
want to
at
talk
all.
And like learn a thing or two. And also I think it really is more compelling to watch somebody be a human being, mm-hmm. make mistakes, say something dumb. Like, that's actually enjoyable to watch, too.
Yeah.
You don't need somebody to be an expert.
Yeah, everybody has that cruel, invisible audience that they picture in their head. Like, watching and critiquing. You'd be like, that's not right. Tweet, 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 you know?
And everyone hates their voice. We said that earlier. People hate their voice.
Their
I'm kind of used to it now. But, I mean, in the beginning, you just cringe.
Yeah, you do cringe a lot when you're like, it sounds so bad. I think another thing that was just with the podcast that was really fun is Keith and I had this, the very first summer that we did the podcast was pretty magical, I would say, because we would go to Keith's house, we would go get food every Friday, and then we would record the podcast, and then after that, we would go down to his basement and jam and play drums and guitar and basically make music.
Yeah.
And part of the cool thing is like the music that you hear at the beginning and the end of the episode, Keith actually made that music. So it's original music, and it was just fun to kind of play around with that and like make songs. And it's cool because Keith has a couple albums that he's, well, not albums, but like you've released enough music online, which we could link to, I suppose.
Yeah, sure.
But it's cool that like one or two of those songs were like things that we had kind of worked on and had turned into full songs. And so, I don't know, that was like, that whole summer was just the best.
Things just fell into place. Things really fell into place. It was a great time. Yeah. And just with music, it was a great opportunity to be really creative.
Yeah.
And then the podcast was like a platform to put some of that out there. And also made me feel good that we made it from scratch.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we took pieces that were already made and aligned them in a way that we wanted. It was like from nothing, we created something.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that there's not like a, like I listen to a lot of podcasts that have like a very stringent structure.
Yeah.
And I actually don't really like that. I think it's fun to have like a little segment here or there.
Yeah.
But like, it gets repetitive to hear people talk in the same way about the same things and the same topics.
I think having a little structure can be good because it does kind of put the push the conversation in a certain direction.
Right.
But I feel like so much of like your life is spent in a very particular role.
Right.
You need to talk a certain way as a counselor. You know, I need to talk a certain way in like the jobs I've had. And the interactions you have in the city or in the suburbs are very scripted,
right.
Ordering food or whatever. It's a weird situation to just talk like this,
right.
You know, in a way that's semi-structured, but for a long time and about a topic that is somewhat substantive. So it's,
right.
it's a unique experience.
And there's a challenge to it of like, you want to push the other person, but you don't want to make it so that you're like a jerk to them, right? So you want to like maintain some harmony in the conversation.
Yeah, you're kind of like a parent in a way because you don't want to, you want to like take care of the other person and like give them a question that they know how to answer, but you still want to like, like you say, push them a little bit.
Yeah, because it makes it more interesting for the audience, you know?
Yeah.
One weird thing, I'll tell you another weird thing, Alice, that you brought up is I've had friends tell me that they feel like they know me really well because they've listened to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I've had friends tell me that they forget that they actually haven't had a conversation with me about something because they've listened to the podcast. So they want to reference it when they're talking to me. And I'm like, we never talked about that, but they think that we've talked about it because they've heard it on the show. And that's a really weird thing to be like, oh, wow, yeah, like you already know my entire opinion on this.
Yeah, I can't think of who now, but I know I've met people who know my voice from the podcast. And they're like friends of yours. And it's like, oh, yeah, I feel like I know, like the sound of your voice is familiar, even though I'm a stranger.
Like, that's really creepy.
The thing is, we put it out, and like I know people are listening, but you don't see them. So it's just sort of out in the ether. And then occasionally it comes back, it creeps back into my life. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like other people actually listen to this.
Yeah, people do actually listen to it. And that's a big part of it, too, is you don't fully, you know, not a lot of people give feedback, which is one of the reasons we're moving to YouTube and doing the podcast in a couple of different formats, is because you don't get a lot. There's a lot of invisible, like you get feedback that's extremely good and you get feedback that's extremely bad.
Yeah.
And you don't get a lot in between. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to get a gauge on like how much people are really liking it or digging it. You can see the numbers go up and down, and that's an indicator. But sometimes that's just a matter of the topic.
I think a lot of that's the topic. Yeah.
So one of our biggest episodes was we did one on anti-vaxxers. Like it's like episode 5 or 6. And that episode like skyrocketed. I mean, we were getting downloads on that episode forever, forever and ever and ever. And that was just to do with the topic because people really hate anti-vaxxers. Yeah. And it was fun to make fun of that. So our bronies episode did good too.
Don't you think the vaccine one too was like, it was a good episode, I thought. Like, I think it was engaging. I think it was one of those where people are listening, they're like, feel like they want to chime in and say something too.
Right. So we got another question.
What is the research that goes into making an episode, or is it all live and on the
fly?
Contemporaneous.
It depends. I mean, if it's something that is more obscure, it's just a matter of going online, reading about it for, you know, however many hours you feel like you need to have a sense of what you want to talk about. I think in the beginning, we would lay stuff out. Like I would have a notebook. I would write down a topic. What are like the subtopics? What kind of questions do I want to ask? What's interesting? Where might a topic, like how might it mutate and turn into something else? How can I relate to it as a sociologist? Other times I know enough just by virtue of being, you know, whatever, in the country, if it's something maybe American specific or whatever it is, where I feel like I can riff and it'll still be interesting. It might not be, you're not going to come to me like the way you consult a dictionary or Wikipedia, but I can make an interesting hour-long piece of content about it.
Right.
And most of the time it's probably in the middle. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that I do a little bit of research for every episode, but it's just enough where I can like, it's to provide structure for the episode in order to move the conversation along. So a lot of times, like if there's somebody we want to reference in the episode, I don't want to be like, oh, what's their name? Mm-hmm. What's their name again? Like that's stuff that I think sounds annoying in your headphones, you know? And so I'll try to have like the names laid out or like kind of like key events. I think a really good example of that is the episode with, Ryan McDermott that we did on masculinity and Trump. You know, I had pulled up some tweets from Trump in advance that we could talk about or like facts about him.
Yeah.
And that's the extent. But that's a huge part is like I don't come into this being like I am the all-knowing god of psychology. like if something pops into my head, like I reference something from psychology that's interesting, yeah, I'll do it. But I don't go into this like, oh, I've done all this research on a psychological topic, because to be honest, I think that would be super boring.
Yeah.
You know, for me to sit here and be like, well, there's been 17 studies that have shown that masculinity does. I mean, that's kind of like where the fun to have a guest is, that they can pull in two or three of those facts. But for me, just to endlessly like sputter psychology facts at people, sure, I think would get old.
No, I also
wouldn't get a feel for my personality.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like if someone's trying to educate themselves, obviously you go to a psychology textbook or you read something for yourself. I don't think people consult the podcast for that. Like, if you can learn a fun fact along the way, that's fantastic. But I think people feel an emotional connection with your personality. They like who you are. They like your attitude.
Right.
And they want to hear your opinions about things. I think that's really the meat of it. I definitely feel like in the beginning, way more self-conscious about wanting to have facts and figures and wanting to like have, you know, some to really be educated about something and to present the facts. And I think somewhere along the way, I realized that's not necessary. It's not what people are looking for. And also it's interesting to see somebody just like, not like messing up necessarily, but just being honest and real and saying, my impression of such and such is this, but you know what, I'm not positive. And you just talk through it like the way you actually do in real life. I think that's much, much more captivating than droning on about, like, you know, the facts.
Right, because if I was listening to, like, I mean, it'd be like watching C-SPAN or something. Sure. If I was just listening, because every podcast I listen to, it's about the person's personality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I hope the people who listen to our show enjoy our personalities.
I like, you know, Radiolab, I like a lot.
Yeah.
Because personality is also like an interesting story and you learn something. Right. So I think those are the best ones.
Or I like when people really challenge like experts, you know, because I think we have, I think Joe Rogan does that quite a bit, is, you know, he'll have an expert on. And I remember there's this one very specific study where they had an evolutionary, I think it was an evolutionary biologist or psychologist on, and they were talking about the hip sizes of women and how like they figured out that men prefer like a certain hip to waist ratio, and they knew exactly what that number was. And when Joe Rogan like asked like, oh, how did they figure that out? And they said they would have like blindfolded men like feel mannequins.
Really?
Yeah. And he was like, that's bullshit. Like, there's no way that that's like legitimate, or we should like draw anything from that.
Yeah.
And I just like, I really like when people do stuff like that. It makes me, kind of makes me laugh. I think it's been really interesting. Yeah. So, but yeah, Keith. So how about going forward with the podcast? You know, what do you kind of see?
Take over the world, man.
Yeah, taking over the world, of course.
Yeah, no, I think it's fun as a project to make it nicer, fancier, like more built up. I would like to make it more professional and kind of turn it into more of a show. It's hard to do, especially when we're not, you know, being physically in the same city is such an advantage. It's much harder to do it long distance.
Yeah, and we do it over Skype now, and we've, you know, invested in some software to make it so we can do a video podcast, because the truth is it's just more engaging, I think, if you do a video, and you get to keep the audio either way. But yeah, I think I see us kind of continuing down the video pathway here. Yeah, I'm really enjoying the live podcast.
Yeah,
it'll be too fun. It's fun watching people kind of come in and talk and chat a little bit. So, but
same time, sipping at the same time. I was gonna say this 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I've been holding on to it.
Okay, I'm ready.
We were talking about like where you're from and what region, and you know, maybe the stupidity of liking where you're the earth beneath your feet, wherever you're born, too much. There's a guy I knew from Michigan who had this shape tattooed on his body, and then he gained a bunch of weight, and the shape like stretched out into a weird stretch. Now he has a tattoo of like a deformed Michigan.
Oh my god!
I just thought
I'd
add
that.
No, I don't think he does.
See, that's a problem with Michigan tattoos, is people just get the lower peninsula, and I don't understand that. Why would you not get the upper peninsula?
I think it's because it's separated by water, and I don't know.
People are egocentric. They don't believe in the upper peninsula, so
it's just not. It just doesn't lend itself to, like, you know, because it is these two different shapes. You know, it's not one unified thing.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. But going back to like other pieces of the podcast that I think are like really, really interesting is Keith was talking about the pieces of like editing. And that's something that was really interesting early on with our dynamic, was Keith would do all of the editing, which is, you know, very tedious work, which I think in a weird way you're like better at than me.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, he likes, I mean, you're a painter and you can like spend 40 hours on a painting.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Keith, if you ever get a chance to see, maybe we'll put it on the Facebook page or something sometime. But some of Keith's artwork is incredible. You know, he went to school for that and just beautifully done. But that was like a challenge for me to start doing, because at one point Keith kind of got a little busy with grad school, and it just was like, we can't continue to, yeah. you know, the episodes are slowing down. So yeah. Learning the editing process and like finding time to like sit there and like edit out the ums
yeah.
and like all the like, all these little like mistakes people make. And that took a lot.
It really sucks at first, but I think once you get the hang of it, you know what you're doing, and then it can be enjoyable after that, mm-hmm. I think. Well, how do you feel about that? Do you like it now, or is it a chore?
I think it's a chore. I like doing the video one better, because yeah. you can be a little bit more creative.
Yeah.
It's not just like pure like, oh, I got to like get this 1 second out of the audio.
Yeah, yeah.
But then my role early on in the podcast was doing all the advertising, running our Facebook page, putting it on Reddit, getting the word out, getting up on the Podomatic page, like getting it all over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a tough thing to do, because at one point you don't want to be annoying.
No.
Right. And it's a very vulnerable place to put yourself. You're like, oh, I want people to listen to this, but like, if you want to, like, don't just like, I know it's kind of annoying.
I remember.
Because when I see other people self-advertise stuff yeah. on like Facebook and everything, I'm like, ooh. And then I'm like, oh, I do that. That's so bad.
I remember you're doing that on Facebook for a while. And at first everyone was super excited that you had this podcast. But yeah. I remember at one point you were like, yeah, I'm not getting the same response
yeah, anymore.
Like
getting
all
annoyed.
My friends are pissed off at me. They're yeah. making stupid podcasts.
Yeah, getting a little annoyed. So try to put it elsewhere. So, okay, we got another question.
All right, we got another one online from Maria.
Okay.
Your podcast here is happening on the eve of the new year,
ooh,
2018, yeah. right around the corner. So what are your mm-hmm. predictions for the new year?
Mm-hmm.
Politics?
Yeah.
What's going to happen in general in 2018?
This is an intense question.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, I think the big question is Trump. What happens with Trump?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's impossible to predict. It's like a ridiculous thing. The whole, you know, everybody who knew anything thought that Hillary was going to get elected. I feel like any predictions now are kind of ridiculous. It's
yeah.
like you have to have some, you know, ridiculous balls to make any kind of predictions after what went down. I think my hope is just that things steady, become steady.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's way too much chaos, way too much turmoil, and there's this sense of deep, deep alienation from within the country, you know, citizens against citizens. And there's really there's no point in it. It doesn't achieve anything. And I think it's in some sense like very childish. Like anybody who feels like a real grown-up, I think appreciates there's humanity in everyone, and people seem to forget that left and right.
Right.
So my hope is just that there's a kind of greater maturity, greater adultness, and steadiness, rather than the kind of crazy chaos and histrionics that have been, I don't know, characterizing 2017.
Right.
That's all I hope for.
One thing I read is, like, I saw this news headline that was, like, Republicans warning Trump of the bloodbath
yeah.
of November of 2018, and just how fearful people are going to be, Republican senators, Republican representatives, of the backlash to Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be really interesting, because I'm pretty sure that Democrats are probably going to take control of the Senate, maybe not the House of Representatives, but at least one House of Congress. And then I think it's going to be really interesting, because then I think that's really poking the bear with Trump.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
you know, there's just going to be pure hatred and arguing between the, you know, the Senate and Trump, which I think is going to really bring out the worst of him.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing. In terms of another, like, technology, I think we're really going to see this. My guess for this year is that we're going to really see the advent of virtual reality. I think there's enough virtual reality consoles between, like, the PlayStation VR
mm-hmm.
and what's the one that what the heck is the name of it? I can't think of the name.
It doesn't matter.
Like the other main big, like, really expensive virtual reality headset. I wish I could remember the name of
this.
Yeah, it's gonna drive me nuts. Maybe our producer can help me remember the name of that virtual reality headset.
Why do you think that's coming?
Because now there's been enough companies that have had enough development time.
Yeah.
It takes like 2 to 3 to 4 years to develop a video game, and now that's been around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're gonna see some kind of combination of Snapchat, Facebook Live, and the virtual reality, where this is heading somewhere where you're going to be able to experience other people's lives and be there
mm-hmm.
in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be something that I think is going to be pretty interesting kind of going forward.
Does that scare you at all? Do you think there are any negative consequences?
I think the further alienation of the individual in general, that people will, you know, I don't have to go to Six Flags anymore because I can just ride the roller coaster in virtual reality.
Yeah.
You know, people, that's just going to keep going, and we got to come up with some kind of like a solution to that eventually. But, you know, at this point I see far too many teenagers, you know, they go somewhere and they sit together and they're all on their phones, not talking.
Or families
not talking.
Dinner not talking.
Not talking. And, but I think that that's going to get to a point where, I mean, people are really going to start living in the matrix a little bit. Not more than they already are. I mean, we kind of are. It's just, you're not in it. You're just looking at your phone.
Yeah.
You're existing in a digital realm.
Yeah.
So.
No, that sounds right. I think too, any like the wearable technology with computers monitoring your health, I think that's going to become incredibly ubiquitous. I think like any, you know, you'll consult technology to tell you what to eat all the time, like what you need, how much you need to exercise. I mean, that's already occurring. Mm-hmm. And I think for some people it'd be great, you know, especially if you have diabetes or if you have some sort of issue, it's understandable why that would seem fantastic.
Right.
But I also think there's a sense of like listening to your body, basically, which sounds kind of hokey, but I think there's, you can get in touch with yourself and your body kind of tells you what it needs. And there's a more earthy kind of a organic way of being in the world. But I think technology hacks that and you can instead consult a screen, which will tell you everything you need, how many hours you need to sleep, all that stuff. I think that will creep in increasingly.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm going to say, I'll just make a pretty bold prediction for 2018, is like the death of TV, like in its traditional form. I think it's like been hanging on by a life thread right now. But it's to the point where, I don't know if you had this experience, Keith, like, but when I went home for the holidays, that was the first time I had watched TV in like a year.
It's funny you say that. I'm doing that right now.
Yeah.
I'm watching TV and I haven't in forever. I watch YouTube, and that's what I do.
Yeah, it's almost like a novelty. Like, it's like, wow, commercials. Like, I forgot about those.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that the cable companies are going to move more toward just being internet service providers. And we're going to see, like, kind of the death of traditional television.
Yeah.
And I think that the big thing that we have to cross over is sports events. Because they haven't figured out, like, the pay-per-view thing is kind of dying. Everyone pirates that, so you can't really do it that way anymore. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, you can't continue just to show NFL games on, like, you know, NBC or Fox, you know, every single week when people are just watching it on the internet. They want to watch it on their phones.
Yeah.
And that's starting to happen. Like, they have, like, NFL Network that you can have on your phone and everything. But at some point, we've really got to cross the bridge to where, you know, that's going to be the final nail in the coffin for television, where nobody – because right now, I think the only people who get television still, it's because there's some kind of sports event that they still watch. And I think that that's probably going to die within the next year.
I could see that, definitely. Yeah, that's a huge change.
And it'll become like an old people. Like, you know, you'll see, like, you know,
feels that way already.
You go to a nursing home or something, television will be on. Or you're at an airport, there's some kind of television on. But at this point, I watch YouTube and Netflix.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much it. So,
yeah.
But. Any other, I see fashion or anything else like that. So we got another question.
Another question?
Yeah. Okay, this is from Maria Online. She's wondering, is Kip your real name? Keith, is that your real name? Or are you guys under aliases for this podcast? Are you government
operatives? Can't discuss that. We can't discuss that.
Can't discuss that. Yeah, Kip is my real name, though. Nobody believes me, ever.
It doesn't seem that unique to me, but maybe it's just because I know you.
Yeah, it is unique, though. Yeah. I've only met like one or two other Kips. And even of the Kips I have met, meeting one with like two Ps is even more rare.
So it's normally one?
Yeah.
Huh.
A lot of times people, it's like their nickname, too. Like, I'll meet a Kip and it'll be what I call a fake Kip.
What's the real name usually?
Like anything else.
Anything else? Where does that come from? Is there like a history to that?
My mom wanted a K name because my sister's name is Katie.
Yeah.
And so they wanted a K name that started that sounded good with Katie. And so she was going to name me Kirk, but then I had a cousin born named Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kirk got stolen from her. And then it was going to be Cody, but she didn't like how Cody sounded for an adult.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, and then she heard there was this guy named like Kip Wiggle or something like that, like this guy's name, and then she liked that name. So then we went with Kip and Katie, and she thought it sounded good.
At least you didn't get the whole Kip Wiggle.
I didn't get the whole Kip
Wiggle. That'd be rough.
Yeah,
that'd
definitely rough. Not. That would be pretty tough. I've often thought about, if I move somewhere else, could I just like change it and start going by,
do you
like,
dislike it that much?
It causes a lot of problems, I would say. Not to just like complain about it, but like it causes like some issues, like because my last name starts with a P too. So what ends up happening is you go, hey, I'm Kip Pietrantonio, and people are like, they hear one word, they can't differentiate what my first name and my last name is.
Yeah.
So then I have to be very particular and say like, oh, my name is Kip Pietrantonio. But most of the time people ask me if I said Kim or Kit. I get a lot of Kit and Kim.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. That's kind of rough. What if you could go, if you get a new first name, what would it be? Or if there are any suggestions out there for a new first name for Kip?
It'd be Keith. Keith would have worked. It fit all my mom's criteria. It was a K name, short, sounds good. So if you have any alternative names, okay.
How has your guys' upbringing affected your podcasting and kind of your outlook on the topics you discussed? How do you think it would be different, say, if you were from Oklahoma as opposed to Michigan? Mm-hmm.
That's rough. That's a great question.
The episode on like growing up in Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan again and again.
We had very different experiences, though.
Yeah,
It's amazing. Even with back to the idea of within one region, there's all this diversity. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, 40 minutes north of Detroit. So I had a suburban upbringing. And the city, I was kind of on the boundary. If you drive south, you get into Detroit where it's like industry and the city life. And if you go north, it becomes really rural very fast, and it's like farmland. So it was a suburban upbringing, but I had both kind of these other options in driving distance. Whereas, you grew up in the UP.
Yeah, in the rural.
That much further away, very rural, forests everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different kind of upbringing, too.
So I remember this moment where I was in college, and I was a college freshman. And I remember I lived next to two kids who were from Detroit, and their names were Brian and Dickie. Yeah. And I think I'm Facebook friends with them. And Brian and Dickie, I asked them if they wanted to go to the mall.
Yeah.
And they were like, why? What do you need? And I was like, nothing. I don't need anything. I just want to go, you know? And we had this like really weird cultural moment where they were like, why would I go to the mall if there's nothing I need?
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, well, because the mall's fun and there's stuff there and it's interesting.
Yeah.
And they were like, it was so obvious that novelty had worn off on them.
Yeah.
And that they viewed things like that as like very practical.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, what we would do, we would go sit anywhere and just talk. And so it wasn't really about like, we would like in my hometown, when you go to sit at Taco Bell or you'd go sit at somebody's house and just talk and talk and talk for hours because there was nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like you couldn't go outside if it was like 5 feet of snow and freezing.
Yeah.
You just spend a lot of time going and doing the exact same three or four things.
Yeah.
And so you had to get kind of creative in your conversation and kind of like expand on jokes and make things that were like repetitive, really interesting in some way.
Don't you think you learn an invaluable skill doing that?
That's what I kind of meant, though, is like I think that translated to the podcast because it's been my experience that people have a hard time sustaining a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, at like parties or go to like a cocktail party, you can talk to somebody for like 5 minutes and then they're like, okay, well, I'm gonna go to the bathroom now or I'm gonna go get another drink or something.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have that longevity.
Uh-huh.
Versus with all my friends from the UP, we can sit down and have a conversation for 3 hours without breaking a sweat like without missing a beat, you know? And a lot of times it's about stuff that's happening before, but a lot of times it can just be about like anything if you just gave us a topic.
Yeah.
So I can think about three or four friends. I could probably sit in a car for like 10 hours and it would be a dream.
Yeah,
it would be so much fun. I wouldn't even be like dreading it at all.
Do you think people in the 1800s could talk like that? Like everybody could talk like that and that's something that people have lost? I wonder about that kind of thing. Our lives are so sort of divided up.
I think people were a lot less egocentric. I mean, I'm way more egocentric even now, in my 30s than I was in my like 20s or teen years. Oh, yeah.
Just because of like stuff like this.
I'm in my world and I'm a siloed and I'm niched right into my own little world where, everything I look on the internet is like psychology and geeky shit and nerdy stuff and like all the stuff I like.
Yeah.
I get political views that agree with me. On my Facebook, everyone hates Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that's not true, right?
Can I say this too? I think like the things that have shaped my outlook are what you would expect, like where I grew up or how much, money my family has or lack thereof or what education I had, all that kind of classic sociological, those variables.
Right.
But in terms of what might be unique for me, I think honestly, the fact that I live now and I have access to podcasts and stuff like that on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think putting on a podcast, listening to people all over the world tell stories and describe, you know, their interpretation of events. I do that all the time. Like every my schedule is I put a podcast on, get on my bike, and I ride to North Philly, Temple University. And on the way home, I do the same thing. So there's at least an hour a day where I'm plugged in listening to other voices in my head.
Right.
Tell me, if it's like downloading information into my brain. And oftentimes it's more than that. You know, if I'm doing laundry or whatever, I always have a podcast going.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how many hours I've clocked in hearing other people tell me about their lives and just tell me about interesting things in the world.
Right.
And I think slowly but surely that has had, it must have had some impact on how I see the world.
Right.
I mean, I think I probably would be a different person in some ways if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
So I think my worldview is different because of social media and podcasts, access to information that I wouldn't have had a couple generations ago.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I think that's a great point. I think that's definitely true. Yeah, you get, it's kind of a blessing and a curse to some extent. So, all right, folks, we hit that 1 hour mark, and that's how long our shows are.
That's how long our shows are.
Typically. And so thanks, everybody, for watching and checking us out. And
keep listening.
Yeah, keep listening. So we'll post links for the podcast and where you can subscribe and all that good stuff. But this has been 50 episodes, and here's to 50 more.
Here's to 50.
Here's to 50 more. Cheers. So we are the Midwestern Social Scientists. If you like the show, please subscribe. I forgot to advertise our Patreon.
Do it now.
So I'm going to do it now. So if you want to donate any money or anything like that to the show to make sure it keeps happening, it's at www.patreon.com/Midwestern. Again, that is www.patreon.com/Midwestern. Each episode takes between like 5 to 10 hours to make. We do it for free. We actually pay a lot of money out to do this podcast, but it's a lot of fun and we really enjoy it. So if you feel like it's worth anything to you, great. If you just want to enjoy it for free, that's great too. But thanks a lot for listening. And episode 51 is already in the can.
Already in the can.
It's ready to go. You'll be hearing that probably next week. So anyway, we're going to be talking about net neutrality, which is pretty exciting. So. All right, everybody. I am Dr. Kip Pietrantonio.
This is Keith McIntosh.
Adios.
Woo. Hey, guys. If you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.